a podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. This is Manna.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Manna, a podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. I'm your host, Jeff Peterson. Now, none of the guys that you meet on this podcast would consider themselves extraordinary, but it's their humble, holy way of living that is exactly what makes them extra to me, and I'm very excited for you to meet them. Now, today, this is a first for Manna. We are outside, so we are in our guest's beautiful backyard patio. We're looking at a wonderfully manicured lawn. We've got a little golf course hole in the back. I mean, it's like being at a resort. So the reason I'm bringing this up is not to cause envy in any of the listeners, but just to apologize in advance. We've got lawnmowers in the background. We've got wind. So I have no idea how this is going to shake down from an audio fidelity standpoint, but it is worth it because this is all about connecting and just having genuine moments with men that inspire me. So on to the introduction. Now, if your life were a sitcom, today's guest would be cast as the funny neighbor who you can count on for the comic relief, the catchphrase that ends up on the t-shirts for your show, and the overall zaniness that fans of your show would love, even more than you. Even if you were the main character, this guest is your wacky neighbor who comes in and basically steals the show. He's the reason that you tune in. He's the life of the party, the one with both the one-liners and the commitment to doing whatever it takes to turn your laugh track up to 11. But behind the scenes, our guest would be known for so much more. His ability to steal the spotlight is outmatched and outshone, if you will, only by his ability to cast that spotlight on you. Whether you're his friend, his brother, his son, his husband, a player on his team, or just a random person on the street whose day would get made better with even a glancing light of this man's attention, even when you don't think you might need it. Business-wise, he's an accomplished sales professional because he's a genuine listener and a problem solver. Family-wise, he's a husband who falls in love with his amazing wife every single day, and a dad who teaches us all how to be better dads. And as a friend, well, he's mine, so back off. I'm just kidding. You are more than welcome to have him be your friend as well. And I can't wait for you to meet him today. Please welcome today's Manna Man, Mr. Joe Swanholm. Joey, welcome to the show.
How are you, Jeff? What an introduction.
Well, it's been a long time coming. You've been a holdout all of season one for listeners who tuned in to season one. Joe was one of the first. You were one of the first guys that were on the call sheet, and you were the hardest one to pin down. So I'm grateful to have worked through your agent to get you to get you on the show finally. And as just to jump right into it here, as I think of our small but dedicated following here on Manna, chock full of relatives and friends of ours. I'm imagining the smiles on their faces right now as they now know who's our guest, and as they're hearing your voice, because they've heard that voice. They've heard your very voice on their voicemails when you've called them on their birthdays. They've heard them, you know, from across a crowded room. They've heard them on a hockey rink, you know, as you've been, you know, barking out orders as a coach. You know, everybody loves you so much, Joe, and they love everything about you. And so, you know, on behalf of all of our listeners, I'm glad you're here because now they can hear you again in this context. And we're gonna get into this. And even for a guy who has so much life and so much joy, I don't want to bring it down a notch here, but as you know, as an avid listener to Manna, and as everybody who's listening knows, you know, we like to start each interview with a specific thing that inspires me about you. Okay, so for all of the fun and all of the life of the party stuff, the thing that I love most about you is actually something that, as I mentioned in the intro, it's kind of behind the scenes, and it's this very thoughtful, very reflective, very, you know, serious commitment that you have to your faith. And one of the ways that comes out that I'm sure a lot of people on this podcast don't know is that you have been part of a men's group, a men's Bible study, for years that nobody knows about. And so now we're going to expose you right now on this show. I'd love you to start and just explain, you know, and then we'll get into family and all this kind of stuff later. But how did that happen? And how, because it's been measured in years, right? I mean, how many years?
Seven now.
Okay. So talk about, so we're going to kind of do a little bit of Benjamin Button here. We're going to start at the end and kind of, and then go backwards. So let's start, you know, then 7 years, which isn't that long ago. What provoked that to you to get involved in a small group, and how have you kept doing it for 7 years? I mean, 7 years, that's a commitment.
So it's interesting because I have a dear friend, maybe some of your listeners have heard of him. His name is Tim Johnson, and it took him 6 years to convince me and get me to be part of that group. I want to give a lot of credit to my wife, Tara, who started her commitment to it probably about 3 years prior to me. And Tim worked me, and he worked me, and he worked me, and I finally said, I'll give it a try. And I remember that first meeting, I thought, oh my goodness, these guys are singing songs, and it was so uncomfortable for me. There was probably 150 guys in a room singing music, and I'm not a singer. But I have to tell you, it's been one of the most rewarding 6 years of my life. And it wasn't even about the Bible study itself. It was about having the ability to be in a group of men, sometimes 12, sometimes 20, and being able to talk about anything.
Yeah.
It was all about trust. I didn't even know these guys, and I could tell them anything. And I think that's really the key to it is, you have to find people in your life that you can trust, mm-hmm. that you can speak to from your heart and know that you can walk away and they haven't judged you. They're not going to say anything and they care about you. And that's what really, really helped me.
How long did it take to get to that point though? I mean, so here you're walking into a room, you got all these guys. I mean, you knew Tim.
Yep.
But did you know any of the other guys at all?
So nobody else.
Just blind. And so how long, I mean, was it kind of an instantaneous after you got over the song?
Yeah.
But how long did it take? I mean, the fact that you even went back,
yep.
I admire, because a lot of times when I'm faced with those situations, I'm like, all right, one and done. Like, that didn't work. I'm moving on. But you kept going back. So how long did it take until you felt like, okay, this is going to be worth it?
3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. It was Tim. Tim kept saying, you need to go back. And by the third year, I was in a group of guys that they let stay together. And we were together for 4 years. And it was a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. You know, you just wanted to go back because you got to know them. And there was old, middle-aged, and there was young.
Yeah.
And guys would cry and guys would smile. It was incredible. But it took me about 3 years to really feel comfortable. I could promise you, if it weren't for him, meaning Tim, I would not have stuck it out. I would have been what you just said. I would have been a year into it going, I don't need to go back to this.
Yeah. So. Yeah. How much of the time, you know, one of the things that you know, you embody, even though a lot of people don't see this side of you, but and a lot of the guys that have been on the show embody, is this way of living faithfully without necessarily, you know, quoting scripture. Every other sentence, you know what I mean? It's just it's an essence. It's a way that you act as a husband and a dad. So back to this men's group, And I don't know, do you call it a Bible study?
Like, it's actually BSF, okay. Bible Study Fellowship.
Okay, so Bible Study Fellowship. But how much of the time, and maybe it's all the time, but how much of the time when you're in fellowship with these other guys, is it overtly like scripture-based, talking about Jesus and that, versus talking about, you know, just life, you know what I mean? And Christ is in everything. But I'm just curious as to know, because I've never been part of a small group, and how much of the time is conspicuously churchy versus just, you know, kind of fellowship and God's working within that, but it's not like, okay, open up your Bibles and we're going to read the book of Matthew. Like, what's that like?
So, as I mentioned, for the first 3 years, it was always different groups, and you were trying to get to know the new guys in the group. By the fourth year, we were in a group, and our leader's name was Jim, and it was about 15 of us, and it went for 4 years. It started out as very Bible, and what started to happen was it's kind of like sales. You got to be willing to ask the tough questions, and that's what they got from me. I let them know, I know nothing about the Bible. 12 years of Catholic school, and I know nothing about the Bible. And there were guys in there that knew a lot. However, what I was able to do from my perspective is give them a perspective of a person that really didn't understand the Bible, but asked the questions that nobody wanted to ask. Mm-hmm. And I think what happened is through that, the Bible, this is going to sound horrible on your podcast, but the Bible became secondary because it became about us guys being able to talk about what we were going through and became very personal. Mm-hmm. And you could relate it to that study in particular. It felt good. It was one of those things where I was really able to, in my eyes, open up an ability to talk about things that guys normally wouldn't talk about, because I ask the hard questions, and that's not a pat on the back. That's just being a real person.
Yeah, right, yeah. But I don't think, you know, I mean, I love what you're saying, and I actually think, and believe me, I am the farthest from any kind of theologian or expert on this, but I actually think, you know, and you are apologizing for, you know, the Bible is kind of secondary. I feel like, you know, and in our faith tradition, where it's both the word and sacrament and tradition, is that, you know, it's kind of like that adage, you know, you're the only Bible that a lot of people are going to read, you know, and the way we treat each other, the way we relate, the way, you know, Jesus did, you know, Christianity especially is not an isolation. It's not a religion of isolation. It's not a religion of go up to the mountains, hang out for like 3 years by yourself and then get enlightened. It's one of, we break bread, you know, we have community, you know, we go out in groups, you know? And so I feel like, you know, that is, you know, the Bible was there even if you weren't looking at the Bible, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I just think that's kind of neat. Did when you got into that, you know, as I think of your awesome family and like we're what was it like as now, you know, here's dad and now dad's trekking off to small group or whatever. Were they surprised? Was it was it a natural kind of a thing? And you know, you mentioned Tara was already kind of doing some stuff. So was it
at the beginning, I think for the kids, it was like, wow, dad's going to Bible study. I mean, he never talked about the Bible.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, as I got into it more, the two older ones were already in college, and it was Monday nights. I'd be driving down to Bible study on Monday, and I'd call Claire. I'd be driving home from Bible study on Monday, and I'd call Willie. It was a reason to call them and let them know what I was doing and find out what they were doing. And whether it had an effect on them or not, I think the most important part about it is, and this is the thing that I learned the most, with this group, it didn't really matter what religion they were. We were all just Christians. Mm-hmm. And we were all thinking the same way, and we were about how can we be better people? And not even better men, just better people.
Yeah.
And part of it for me was being able to say, hey, to my kids, this is what I'm going to do. And maybe it helped them to think about it. Or, to be honest with you, a lot of times they helped me to think about it.
Yeah, that's so cool. Such a great
connection.
Hopefully
that makes some sense.
The other thing I wanted to, you know, kind of really talk about, and for those listening that know Joe, you'll be able to finish the end of my sentence, but you have dedicated your so much of your life, first and foremost, to God and to Tara and to your own kids. But you've also been so generous with your time and your talent and just your essence with other kids, other young people, you know, coaching for the many years that you coached hockey. And also just being, you know, being one of those dads that expresses just as much interest in our kids and in all of our friends' kids as seemingly your own. and I wanted to just ask about, because inherently that is Christ, okay? And even though, you know, that's not, you know, you're not, again, quoting scripture to all these kids, but that generosity, you know, that real selflessness is evident. And I'm just wondering, like, where did that come from? You know, because it seems to come so naturally, you know? And I'm just wondering, has that always been, like, was your dad like that? I mean, did you grow up with just this very open, generous approach to young people? Because I think, you know, as very influential as they should be, parents are to their kids, you know, I think the influence of another caring adult on a young person's life is profound, and it seems to come so naturally to you. And I'm just wondering, you know, where does that come from, and how do you connect that to your faith?
Wow.
I know that's kind of a big question.
Yeah.
When it came out of my mouth, I'm like, gosh dang, that sounds like the...
Well, let me start it off with this. I really like people. Mm-hmm. The essence of who people are, and I'm not trying to be deep here. This is Joe. I'm just a regular guy. You know, it's an interesting question. There were a lot of coaches in my life as I was growing up that had a profound effect on me. And there were a lot that I don't even remember. But the ones that had an effect on me, they weren't spouting about Christianity. They weren't spouting about God. But you know what they did? They showed me how to be a good person. Mm. And I could name four of them right off the bat. It's pretty incredible. And one of the things I always found fascinating was, I believe it was Kyle, our youngest, who said, I want you to coach because the other guys like you. Mm. And I always sat back and went, okay, he probably doesn't want me coaching him, but his buddies like me.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel forced to tell Dad to coach. But when you sit back and think about it, just by having fun and not being their parent, they have their own parents, but having somebody that they can have trust in, they could tell me things that they know would never go outside that locker room.
Yeah.
And it could be about girls, it could be about religion, or it could be about whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And what really started to happen is in the 90s when I was a non-parent coach, and I had these kids that I was coaching, and I was upper 20s or something like that. I'm seeing those guys now at the arena with their kids, and they are remembering things that we talked about together. And I sat back and I said, that's what it's all about. As long as those guys are able to do that for those kids later on, that's what it's all about. It's feeding people to be better people.
Yeah.
Now I'm starting to feel like I'm talking in circles, but the truth is, if we help the next generation is going to help the next generation, and onward and onward. And it's just about being a good person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's great. How is that something that you know, we all grew up in various families, and some were super religious and some were more, you know, kind of passively, whatever. But what was it like growing up in the Swanholm household? Like, did you feel like it was a very sort of devout, you know, kind of, I mean, you mentioned your 12 years of Catholic school that clearly did not stick, but what was it like, you know, and you know, was there ever is the way you live now just a continuation of how you were raised? Or when you look at how you are raising your family and how active you all are in your faith, you're very animated in the spirit, but in a very real way, not an overly, you know, preachy way. Is that what it was like growing up, you know, with in the Swanholm household?
Wow. This is getting really deep. All right, so here's where it's at. Two younger brothers, mom and a dad. The most profound effect I had is at 21 years old, my dad passed away. That had an incredible impact on me. And I won't go into the details, but I will tell you this. When dad passed away, I literally remember saying, okay, this doesn't make a lot of sense, God. Mm-hmm. And I was only, junior and going into my junior year in college. I never went to church. I was so mad. I had two younger brothers. The youngest was a sophomore in high school, junior in high school. So it was a pretty tough time. And then as I got older, I started to figure out that it wasn't a punishment. It was something I could learn from. But it was a difficult thing because I always had my dad on my shoulder, who only knew me as a 21-year-old and everything prior.
Yeah.
And he didn't see the beautiful wife I married, and he didn't see the kids, and he didn't see me graduate from college. So as I got older and older and older, I said to myself, you need to be the best person you can be because you have a limited time and you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So I think when you look back, and this is where the men's group has helped me in discussing faith, is God does everything for a reason. And the reason he did that was to help me be a better husband, to help me be a better father, a better coach, and a better friend. But ultimately, every day, I think about my dad, and I think about what I've missed, and I don't want the people in my life to miss that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's great. That's great, man. That's, well, that makes for a wonderful message and lesson, but it also makes for a crappy transition to the next part of our episode here, which is the fun segment. So every episode, we like to ask the same three questions to all of our guests, kind of lighten the mood a little bit. And so as a reminder, all of the guests on Mana have seen these questions before. And so if they balk, if they feign, you know, like, oh, that's a really good question, I haven't thought about that, they are lying. So they've seen all of these questions. So there's three questions, and so we're going to jump right into it. So fun segment question number one. If Jesus himself knocked on your door tomorrow and just wanted to hang out, what would you do with him?
I would do exactly what we're doing right now. I would bring him in. I would open my beer fridge, and I would hand him...
Which, by the way, is fantastic. Your selection is impressive.
Thank you. But he would receive a Molson Canadian, my favorite. And we would sit down on this patio, and we would just talk.
Yeah.
And listen and ask questions. And then, around 8 o'clock, I would call my closest buddies, and we would do a bonfire, and we would just hang out. And we'd bring their wives, and if their kids want to come, they can come, and we would make it a party.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Appropriately.
Yes. A lot of wine. No, it'd be like, get over here. You'll never believe who's here.
You'd never believe me either.
We'd come. All right, fun segment question number two. If you could go to church with any other guy, living or dead, who would it be?
So all three of them are dead.
Okay.
The first Sunday, I'd go with my dad, and we've already talked about him, because I would want my dad to go with me to see who I am now. My dad's been gone longer than he was with me, mm-hmm. So I would love to go to church with him on a Sunday and then go to brunch and have Bloody Marys and just talk.
Yeah.
Then the following Sunday, and this is going to come out of left field, I would want to go with two guys.
Okay.
Thomas Jefferson and John Adams.
Wow.
And I've thought about this. When you think about who they are and what they did, and to live in the world we're living in today, yet their values and their thought-provoking ideas still work today, it blows me away. And to be able to do what they did and write a constitution and build a country, I'm just, there's no other way to say it's blown away.
The staying power is staggering.
Yeah. It blows me away.
Yep.
So there's my
three. Oh, those are your three. Oh, those so you three? Lumped in numbers
so my dad
two and
by
three.
Myself, yeah, and then two and three then two together. Three. Got yeah, it. We okay. walk in together right. in Sorry. Our right. knickers.
Got it. your powdered wigs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Which you probably have upstairs
yes.
in the closet.
All right. I have a couple.
Last question. Fun segment question number three. And you can hearken back to your days as a coach. You can think of your days now as a dad. However you want to think of it. Fun question number three. If you had one piece of advice to give to a young man about being comfortable in living his faith, what would that one piece of advice be?
So I was mowing the lawn the other day listening to Manna.
Right.
I swear to you, I was. And I remember that third question, and I thought about it, and I came up with this. Never, ever, ever doubt God. You don't need to evangelize in my eyes. That's who I am. You don't need to tell the world. However, I truly believe if you don't put it in God's hands, you won't succeed. You cannot do it on your own. Make him a part of your life. And I have learned that over and over and over from the number one person in my life, Tara, and my BSF. Every decision I make in my life, big or small, if it doesn't have God involved, it's probably not the right decision. Mm-hmm. And I say that from my heart. And I would say that to any young soul. And again, it's not about preaching. It's not about telling everyone. It's about you inside of who you are. I wholeheartedly believe that.
That's great. Joe Swanholm, thank you so much for being here.
This is fun. We should do this again.
Thank you for listening to Manna. If you have any questions or recommendations for future guests, send them to mannapodcast@gmail.com.